When last we met with my guest, Kelly Ritchie, she had just released a book entitled Whisperings, a collection of poems by blues guitarist Kelly Ritchie. That was about 2 years ago, Kelly?
No, actually, that poetry book came out a while back, but we did talk about that last time I was on the air. We talked a lot about writing, because I had become a writing facilitator for Women Writing for a Change.
That's it. Well, since then, Kelly Ritchie, who critics describe as Stevie Ray Vaughan trapped in a woman's body with Janis Joplin screaming to get out, in case you haven't been anywhere near the live music scene in the last 20 or so years, Kelly has a brand new project in addition to everything else that she continues to do as a guitarist, a teacher, a writer, a volunteer in schools and with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and as a life coach. Kelly doesn't sit still very well, do you?
I don't. Although in a van for 1 million miles, I had to, you know, but I had a seatbelt. So,
well, you're good enough to slow down for a visit here for Around Cincinnati. I'm Elaine Deal, Kelly Ritchie, officially welcome back. Thanks for coming by. Okay. So the latest project is the Spear Shakers. Let's talk about it.
Right at 2 years ago, I sold my house. I downsized. I just promoted my last CD, Shakedown Soul. I'd toured with that for about a year, and I wanted to simplify. So I sold my house, and I got this beautiful little condo, and I stepped back, and I thought, you know, what do I want to do? I've always taught guitar lessons. I continued with that. I've done life coaching for almost 10 years now. So I continued with that. And I didn't know musically what I wanted to do. I'd been doing a lot of ambient stuff, getting into my studio, getting that set up. And then I got asked to do 3 things that are on my list of things I just don't do. I got asked to play in a cover band, and I've always done original music except for, you know, the guitar players like Hendrix and stuff that I, you know, I'm so influenced by. I'll do my own version of something like that. So a cover band, I was asked to play in an all-girl band. I started out that way in Stealing Horses. It was like 3 females in the front seat of an S10 pickup for, you know, 500 shows. That was enough. and to play on New Year's Eve. I hadn't played a New Year's Eve gig in ages. So I said, you know what? It was in Lexington. It was a group called The Binders. They were doing women in rock. And it was sounded like such a fun thing. I said, if you can get Sherry McGee to play. She had been in a band called Velvet Elvis on Enigma Records when I was with Stealing Horses. And they said, well, let me see. And Sherry said, yes. And we had so much fun. We connected. And I'd always wanted to do like a White Stripes and Black Keys kind of thing, at least for 10 years. They haven't always been around. And I asked her, I said, would you be interested in that? And she goes, I'd love to. And so we got together and rehearsed twice. And it's like, she's so great. All I have to do is come prepared. And she's all over it. And we've had so much fun. And so we did 3 singles. At the first of the year, I went back through my catalog and looked at all of the material that I really thought would work as a 2-piece, things that maybe I hadn't done in a while. And we've put it together like that. And so we released 3 songs, and about to release this month, February, we will be releasing the 3rd of 3 music videos. Yeah. So the Spear Shakers is just a female power duo.
You've been out playing?
Yes.
What's the response?
You know, it's so funny. Like when I played with Freak Bass, people would say, I don't know who to look at, you or him. And they're saying the same thing with Sherry. She is a fantastic drummer and performer. I mean, it's wonderful competition on stage, you know, for us. You know, and I say that with, we just really, really love each other and enjoy playing together. We just push each other to be our best, and I love it. So I hadn't planned on getting back on the road, and I have no plans to, like, go back on the road and live. But we're looking at festivals. We're looking at, you know, doing shows. We play here in Cincinnati. I've made my home here, the Greenwich, on Gilbert Avenue, which is in Walnut Hills. And I play there with Sherry once a month. And this last month, because of the weather, we had to cancel a Saturday. So the following week, we did a Sunday unplugged. Actually, I plugged my acoustic in, but we did it, you know, a semi-unplugged acoustic. And she had, you know, brushes on her drums. And she started singing harmony with me for the first time.
Oh, really?
And so this is just an ever-expanding process, and I'm just having a lot of fun.
Well, you're a really independent artist and got a strong will of your own and a strong sense of your own musical identity. Yeah. How is it collaborating with someone else who is equally strong?
It is wonderful because we click. You know, we have so much respect in each other. We do things that the other can't do. You know, she would never want to take on leading a band or trying to get that happening. So she has a lot of respect for what it takes to do that. And if I say, hey, we got to jump, she says, how high? You know, because she knows, you know, how difficult things are. And her forte in writing and stuff tends to be more country. But our roots, like, she's like John Bonham on the drums, you know. So she's way more versatile than I am as far as what she brings to the table. She can kind of do anything I do. So we want to write together. We're starting to write together. We put our toe in the water. I'm totally open. Anything that comes from us that's good, I'm totally open. It does not have to be all about me.
Well, you said you've done a couple of singles. Mm-hmm. Is the goal to do a whole album?
You know, I want to put out a series of singles and videos because that's what the market eats up. Putting all of your life's work into this masterpiece of a CD, and then 2 months later, it's old. And I'm still mining my older material, seeing what fits here. And I went back to a really early CD, midpoint in my career, Dig a Little Deeper. That was acoustic folk songs that I'd written that I did with the band. And, you know, it definitely wasn't blues. It was a little confusing. But it was, you know, a stage in my career, and it was what I believed in, and I did it, you know. So you do those things.
We're visiting with Kelly Ritchie, whose career, just as a musician, would exhaust most of us. But playing live and recording is just one small part of your world, right? Kelly, you mentioned guitar lessons.
Yes. I have taught almost since I started playing. It's been wonderful. The internet has allowed me. I have Skype students all over the world. And so Skype or FaceTime, I teach throughout the week. And I have two guitar instruction series, the oldest online guitar instruction platform, TrueFire.com. They brought me down to Florida in their studios and we shot two series. So it really makes it nice when I work with people online because we can move quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about them getting off the call and saying, now, what did she say? It's like, here's the video. You've got me sitting in your living room all week long and we can identify, you know, a really productive path to go down so you know exactly where to place your time, because on YouTube there's a ton of free instruction. You know, I mean, it's endless. But people come to me and they know pieces and parts of 100 songs and they don't feel comfortable going and sitting in even at a local jam. So I help people put a path together for learning and for practice because life's busy. And I say, if you give me 20 minutes, I don't want you practicing more than 20 minutes. Practice 20 minutes and then play. Because if you practice properly, it will show up in your playing. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking when you play, then you're not having fun. And so in this world today, people want to have fun. So I'm a passionate teacher. I love to teach guitar.
I read an interview with a classical guitarist recently where he talked about how the guitar is so close to your body and you can actually feel the vibrations of the instrument. What is it that makes you and your guitar one?
My fingertips. One, I mean, when I first heard Jimi Hendrix, I grew up in a Baptist family, not that we were against music or anything, but Engelbert Humperdinck and Tom Jones were the rowdiest things, you know, in my music collection.
Had been.
And my grandmother passed when I was 8 years old, and we had to sell both houses to take care of my grandfather. And the only thing in the house we moved in that was there was a poster, a fuzzy blacklight poster, and it had a crazy-looking guy with his arm up in the air and a guitar strapped on. It said, "See you in the next world. Don't be late." I didn't know who it was. And I was 8 then. When I was 15, I still didn't know who it was, but I'd kept that poster because it glowed with a black light. And so one of my first songs that I ever learned was, my teacher gave me, was Hey Joe. And so finally someone said, "You don't know who Jimi Hendrix is." The first song I heard by Hendrix was And the Gods Made Love. So that feedback and that wall of sound immediately introduced me to Jimi Hendrix and really to my guitar, because I'd only been playing a few months. And long story short, about halfway through my career, there was a guy in Nashville I saw playing, and he had just, you know, a very minimalist, kind of a jazz setup. And I asked him, you know, I thought, he was subbing for Warren Haynes, and I used to go watch Warren play and then sit in. They had a jam session afterwards. Warren wasn't there that night. I was disappointed. Boy, I should have known in Nashville, people play circles around everything. You know, he was amazing. And I went to him, I said, "How do you get that sound? How do you get that sound out of that?" And he said, "Do you ever practice your guitar unplugged?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, that's your first mistake." He said, your sound starts in your fingertips. And so that stuck with me. And from that point forward, the connection with my instrument began to deepen. And as I've matured and just in general grown spiritually, you know, and personally, that connection with my instrument has been a centerpiece of how I teach and how I look at the instrument and how I stay in shape with the instrument. Because my days of sitting and practicing every day to learn how to play have passed. Now to deepen my, you know, and define my voice, you know, what am I looking to do? And in creating soundscapes and stuff in my studio, that has become just an ongoing conversation. And it's healing. I'm wanting to do more and more guided meditation soundscapes. And I've been recording, I have probably 100 of those that I'm in the process of chopping up and mixing and putting out.
And that blends nicely into your work as a life coach and a writing facilitator.
Yes.
All ways of healing and bringing out creativity.
Yes. In 2015, I became a writing facilitator for Women Writing for a Change. And that was very life-changing. That gave me a community in Cincinnati to kind of come in for a landing. And that opened the door for me to, I'm about to graduate from a 3-year program in Columbus. I'll be a spiritual director, 1st of May. I'm in the middle of my very first series at Women Writing for Change called Celebrating Our Struggles. It's about celebrating those unique qualities in our lives that typically come from those things that we've struggled with. And it's been a very successful series, and we're going to be running it quarterly. So if you go to their website, you'll see information about that and all of the other wonderful classes and summer series that they have.
I read recently where you said that you are a cautious embracer of technology and you love what it can do for you, but mostly you have to remember when to turn it off.
Yes. You know, for a while, I was doing a great deal of solo stuff, trying to find ways in which to incorporate electronic technology that we have into a very vintage sound. And it's been tricky. And, you know, that is a process that I will continue to move through. But the turning it off, I think I want to reframe that now at this stage. It's a matter of tuning in to it. And how can it serve me? And how can I use it in the tapestry that I'm creating as the appropriate tool? And having the opportunity to play with Sherry to where I don't need that live, but I can incorporate that in more of the ambient thing instead of, you know, trying to do that live band thing. You know, I think that for me has its limitations at this point because I'm just so used to playing with the drummer and it's so central to that.
As 2019 rolls into its second month, Kelly Ritchie says that she is more inspired than she's ever been, that she loves what she does and is thankful to be able to do what she loves. To quote from her poem, The Light, "Love is what you find when you've looked for everything else and came up empty." Kelly Ritchie sharing and spreading love and never slowing down. Her new band with Sherry McGee is the Spear Shakers. They're playing
on the last Saturday of February, which is the 23rd. And we start at 9 o'clock. And Mark brings in really great pizza. I can't think of the name of the place he brings it in from, but people love it. And so there's free pizza.
Is that a once-a-month gig?
Yes, once a month. And it fluctuates which Saturdays. We try to be consistent, but sometimes our schedules.
Always something good going on at the Greenwich.
Yes. I love that place.
Always something good going on with Kelly Ritchie. For a link to her music, her writing, her teaching, and everything else, Ritchie, visit our website, wvxu.org. Kelly, have your people call mine. We'll schedule our next up with Kelly talk in about a year.
I'll bring another pot of coffee.
Safe travels and keep playing, my friend.
Thank you so much.
For WVXU, I'm Elaine Deal.